Joe Biden and China's President Xi Jinping got together this week and they talked for 3 hours. And I wonder if they got round to that hardy perennial of how are the renovations going? Because the Chinese government has been remodeling some of the country's biggest mosques. At the 700-year-old Dongguan Mosque in Xining, they've ripped out the domes and the turrets. Anything that looks Middle Eastern, gone. But is this renovation part of a broader campaign to suppress minority cultures? Dr. Haiyun Ma of Frostburg University in the US is an expert on Islam and China.
They want to demolish all this like onion dome, what they call the Arab or Middle Eastern style mosque. And of course, they try to remodel as Chinese temple style. So this is basically what they do. And also, I think they try to cut off some kind of cultural influences from outside, especially the Middle East Arabs. Mm.
What does the Chinese government not like, though, about the appearance of these mosques in the city of Xining?
Because, you know, in Xining, there is one of the four greatest mosques in China, the very famous Dongguan Mosque. And of course, the Dongguan Mosque used to be influenced by, of course, Han Chinese, Tibetan, and of course, later on by Arab cultural styles. So that's why the Chinese government decided to demolish all this dome, which was actually introduced after 1970s, 1980s. So basically, they tried to restore the so-called traditional Chinese style mosque, as I mentioned earlier, which is more like a Chinese temple mosque. Mm. So they want to, you know, demolish all this newly added architecture, which basically resemble Middle Eastern style mosque.
Yes, it's fascinating how much money from the Middle East, especially from the Gulf countries, has gone into China in the last, say, 20 or 30 years that has created what you describe as the Middle Eastern style onion dome mosques.
For Chinese government, it's very sensitive to, you know, introduce Middle Eastern money, especially if you build mosque or something. Back to 1980s, 1990s, you do have some private funding from Middle Eastern countries. But generally speaking, the government strictly controlled the flow of Middle Eastern money. So all these mosques were basically built by Chinese Muslims. They basically use their private money, not really, you know, from Middle Eastern Gulf countries. It's really sensitive politically.
You've said there's an effort by the government to Sinicize a lot of the Islamic community to make it more Chinese. But is it really also about making minority communities really conform to the dominant Han ethnicity in China?
I think you're right, because when people talk about Sinicization, most of scholars, they basically talk about how, you know, it's more like a national level. They say, well, if you are like an alien, you know, religion, no matter Islam, Christianity, Buddhism, you have to, you know, fit into Chinese context, which is very true at the very beginning. But remember, Islam, like Christianity, like Buddhism, entered into China for almost like 1400 years. So there is no such thing as like a foreign. But the Chinese government basically tried to make everything minority, like, you know, Han culture, Han style. So in this sense, I would say Sinicization is really narrowly defined as assimilated into Han culture.
And what would that look like in practice? I mean, there's 55 distinct ethnic minority groups that the Chinese government recognizes. If you're trying to get as many communities as possible to look like the dominant Han ethnicity, what does that look like in practice? What is phased out? What is smothered in a way?
Peoples like Mongols, Koreans, Muslims, Uyghurs, Tibetans, all these people, they have their own distinct, you know, religions or culture or language. So that's why the Chinese government decided to force them to become Han Chinese. Other minorities, for example, you just mentioned the 55 ethnic minority. But some of the ethnic minorities, they really don't have very distinct religion. they do not really have connection with other countries. For example, if you look at some minorities in Sichuan province, Guizhou province, it's more like a very small population with local, you know, custom. You don't have to have foreign connection. You don't have to have like a powerful world religion. You may have some so-called ethnic customers. That would be okay. But for peoples like, as I mentioned, Mongols, Koreans, Uyghurs, Hui's, it's a huge population. Second, they are connected to other countries in one way or another. So that's why we see from Mongolia to Tibet to Xinjiang to Qinghai and other regions, all these peoples with distinct culture or religion became the target of so-called sinicization.
This is a very interesting point that you make, Professor. Is there a fear at the top of the Beijing government that any distinct ethnic group that wants to cling to its distinctive culture, to its distinctive language, will somehow have a loyalty to a foreign government?
It's really weird because if you think about back to 1970, even after 1949, Chinese government basically believe in what they called diversity in unity. They do emphasize political loyalty. At the same time, they respect cultural diversity. That tradition, I think, lasted until 2010 or 2012 or 2013. But after 2013, the so-called second generation ethnic policy basically began to forcefully assimilate non-Han ethnic minority. I really don't think they impose any threat to Chinese political regime, but culturally, I think the current government, they really try to make everything like a Han Chinese.
I think you've said that the government in Beijing is also trying to splinter the Muslim community in China by creating almost new sects, new Muslim sects. What's happening there?
Any religion, you do have kind of sects or, you know, solidarities. But now when you created all this so-called Sinicized mosque, Sinicized architecture, then you actually divided Muslim population at the local level. Because some people support this policy. They basically argue that, well, our faith is in our heart. Why we care about all this outside construction, our style? But some Muslims believe, of course, mosques look today like Middle East, Southeast Asia, India, anywhere you do have like a dome. Why should the government destroy, you know, all this dome? So you basically created divisions among Muslim communities. So that's why some Muslims support it. Some must oppose. You actually began to say, well, some say, oh, you guys just like policy imam. Some basically stick to what they believe should be, you know, Islam or Muslim.
Just before we go, Professor, you have written extensively about China and its relationship with Afghanistan. What does Beijing think that it will gain from an alliance with the new Taliban government of Afghanistan? Because Beijing is one of the few governments around the world to initially recognize the Taliban regime.
I really don't think Chinese government tried to make alliance with Taliban regime, because no matter, you know, how they approach Taliban by providing some humanitarian assistance, I really think Chinese government worry about Taliban. They have no choice but to work with Taliban at this moment. They have to work with the Taliban, and they try to work with Pakistan. They try to maintain so-called stability in Western frontiers. Because if you think about Xinjiang issue, especially in Afghanistan, all these political parties are Islamic party. So that's what I think Beijing really worry about. If you have a Taliban regime, especially when Taliban has connection with other, you know, militant groups, especially Al-Qaeda, especially East Turkestan, you know, Islamic movement, our East Turkestan Islamic Party. So Chinese government basically tried to hope that the Taliban can curb all this separatist movement. I really don't think they really try to make alliance with Taliban, but they try to use a Taliban to control all these militant groups, especially targeting China.
So is Beijing operating out of fear here?
Yes, yeah, sort of fear. I would say because when Taliban came to power, no matter in the 1990s and now, Beijing really worry about, because if you look at the Taliban, if you look at even today, RSKP, Islamic State, Holoshan province, especially the Al-Qaeda, are very affiliated with Taliban. They criticize the Beijing policy. And of course, we see what happened in Syria. You actually see the weaker militant groups there. So nowadays, I think Chinese government, when they choose all these different parties to cooperate, Taliban, of course, is the most dominant, most powerful in Afghanistan, especially when Taliban try to transform itself as a kind of ethnic nationalist movement. I think Chinese government really hope to use Taliban to control other, you know, small militant groups, especially weak elements either within Al-Qaeda or a separate political party or militant, you know, organization like a TRP or a ETRN. So this is basically not really a happy marriage, but I would say this is a convenient, you know, marriage between Beijing and the Taliban.
Thank you very much for joining us on the program, Professor.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Dr. Haiyan Ma of Frostburg University.